Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, the Internet Advisor, with our merry band of experts in here, Gary, Ed, Cal, and Shane, and we have a very special co-host, Randy Peck, who's going to be he's a patent lawyer. We're going to be talking about hunting patent trolls. And then we're also going to be talking about a wonderful organization, which is iChallenge, and a walk to end blindness. All that coming up in this hour. And of course, hour number two, answering your questions. So stick around. The next 2 hours are yours. Welcome to a Memorial Day weekend with the Internet Advisor. I realize some of you and our affiliates will be hearing this afterwards, but thank you for those of you joined us on this weekend. You may be hearing us in the car as you're heading up north to a vacation spot. Well, we've got everybody in studio here and quite a program. We're going to be troll hunting, and we're going to be helping the blind to see with a walk. And lots of other things going on in this hour. So, first of all, Gary, good to have you here.
It's great to be here. You know, when my I said goodbye to my mother-in-law and she said, "See you on the radio," I had no idea she knew what we were doing today.
That's cool. Gary Baker, our co-host for these many years, going on 17 of them. Ed Riddell. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, Foster. You had to drag me into the studio today, practically.
Man, I tell you.
So beautiful out today.
It is gorgeous outside. This is a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. But you've got a hairy tale to tell later on. We're going to save that for later in the show. Cal's with us. Oh, great white-haired one.
Wow.
Are you on tenterhooks waiting for WWDC, the big Apple event coming up in a little over a week?
You know, I'm always interested in what's new that's been coming along down the pipe and that sort of thing, but, you know, I'm not the sort of type where I have to, like, if that was true, I'd have tickets and I'd be out in San Francisco. But no, I'll just sit back patiently and wait and see what sort
chilling
of...
Chilling out.
You're really not checking the rumor sites every 5, 10 minutes, eh?
No, every 6 or 7 minutes, and every 5 or 10. But, you know, I really got to appreciate Gary's mom. You know, she has, you know, such insightful, you know, the fact that she can actually see her son on the radio. I love that.
That was envisioning my mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law, yes, envisioning it.
That's her radio cam. Yeah, but, you know, right. Should I pat her on anymore? Let's just go to the next microphone.
That's right. Shane, good to have you here.
Yeah, you have me.
Shane, hey, by the way, how was the Comic-Con last weekend?
It was awesome. It was so crowded.
So did people come up to you?
I had a couple, but it's so crowded. You know, it's like bumpy. Like I said, you don't know who you're even walking next to. It's so crowded. Like the guy from Walking Dead, I was walking next to him, didn't even know it. My daughter hits me. He goes, "You know who that is?" I said, "Oh." And you're like Albert, don't even know it.
You know, I was walking
He's walking
out.
Dead. That's
you
why.
You were walking dead, too, eh?
I was out there walking around, and Shatner, you know, he was out there, too. He walked up, he says, "Where's Shane at? I want to get..."
Yes.
He wants that thumb drive.
We're hanging out.
I can't find Shane.
And the other person we have in studio today, and I'm delighted, is our co-host for this show, special co-host, and that's Randy Peck. He's a patent lawyer with Warner Norcross and Judd. You've been on with us before, Randy, but it's good to have you in studio.
Well, thanks. It's good to be here for the first time.
You see the crazy band we have?
I do. It's a lot more fun to be here in person.
I was just going to say, if there was a webcam where people could see what's going on, wow, would we have to clean up our act?
Well, one of the reasons we have you in here is to talk, because patents have been in the news this week a lot, and we figured we wanted to get somebody who's on the inside of it. You're a patent lawyer. It's a little bit of background. Your background, if I remember the first time we talked, is you were was for engineering?
My initial degree was in chemical engineering.
That's
before
right.
going to law school.
And you went to law school on top of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
After having such a great degree like chemical engineering, why law?
I got to say, I disappointed a few people in my family.
I can imagine so.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Because there was a lot more time you were adding on to it as well.
It was.
And now, is that a kind of a necessary combination for a patent lawyer?
To do the type of patent law that I do, yes, it is. You don't have to be an engineer to go to court and litigate cases. But to prosecute with the U.S. Patent Office, you do have to be an engineer or a scientist of some type.
Okay. Well, a lot of things
you got to know what you're doing, right?
You got it.
Well, that's exactly. You have to be able to talk knowledgeably about that industry in particular, right?
Exactly, yes.
And that's the key to it. So on Warner Norcross and Judd, are there other lawyers there who are specialized in other fields like that?
Yeah, absolutely. We cover the gamut from electrical engineering to mechanical engineering to environmental engineering to chemical engineering.
So all those folks are all engineers? I mean, they're in their particular fields, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. You kind of marry your law practice based on your engineering background.
Good Lord. How
do you... And you know, when we talk about U.S. patent law, while it's complicated, it's understandable. It's really tough to really understand international patent law because it seems like every country has a different patent law and different terms.
They absolutely do.
And prior art means something different in different countries.
Oh, wait a minute,
Gary. How do you get your arms around that?
Well, I have to give a lot of bad news about China quite a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
When we figure out how to get a patent or enforce a patent there. But essentially, you know, you have to work closely with local patent attorneys in each country where you do business and sort of abide by each law independently of one another.
Let's step back. You said something, Gary. I don't know if it's true or not, but the patents are kind of easy to understand. If it were so, how have we had this Apple-Samsung thing dragging on for eons?
Well, let's be honest. They want to make it a little bit more complicated than it needs to be at times to
of
argue
course.
For more money. But
and now those patents are probably international patents, right?
They yes,
have
absolutely.
To be, right?
Yep.
Samsung doesn't even, you know, it's probably not Samsung U.S.
Right.
It's probably Samsung headquarters, parent company in Japan.
And we see them fighting it out here in the U.S., but what you don't see in the U.S. media as much is the exact same battle is occurring right now in Korea, in Europe, in Japan, in China. So it's
tell me, do you think that the whole notion of patents is kind of broken?
I would say no. I would say that there's some frustration, but most of the frustration and most of the media attention now is in this software realm, which is you know, such a unique beast in and of itself just because the technology is incrementally improved so quickly compared to anything else.
Well, you know, I'm a little bit confused. Well, not confused, but, you know, I have noticed that, for example, if I create, I don't know, an invention, a microphone, and then I have it manufactured over in China, and I got it patented here, but, you know, they're building them over there, and in three factories down the road, they're making knockoffs like they're going crazy. How do you control that?
Well, if you have a U.S. patent,
you don't control it, right?
It's, right. I mean, it's territorial, so you can stop someone from making or selling it in the U.S. or importing it in the U.S., but you can't control anything else that's occurring outside the U.S. And so commonly they'll make it in China and try to import it, and you have to try to stop them where they're importing and have it destroyed.
Randy Peck, we're going to come back with you and talk about trolls.
Okay.
And some other things that have to do with patents as well. Randy Peck, patent attorney with us here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. By the way, if you would like to find out more information about the people that we talk with here, like Randy Peck, a patent lawyer with Warner Norcross and Judd, you can go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and there's some more information there. By the way, Randy, I don't know if you saw on our homepage, I picked up an image off of the Internet that said, it's a picture of President Barack Obama, and it says, "Don't feed the trolls." And that whole issue of trolls has been a very, very big issue in patents, hasn't it? And it's been primarily because of trolls being people who don't necessarily, they aren't the inventors.
Well, sometimes they are the inventors.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Essentially, the definition of what a troll is has sort of changed over time, but the common accepted definition now is essentially a non-practicing entity.
Okay.
So it's a party that has a patent. They may be the ones who invented it. They may have purchased it from another, but they essentially have a patent, but not a company making a product that's associated
with
it.
So it's like they're gathering these things and then kind of building a war chest with them sometimes.
You got it.
And then they will go after people to have them to license to use that particular thing, even though they're not involved in the process.
Exactly.
So, Randy, is this similar to back in the old days when the Internet first got started and people would get websites and hold on to them even though they weren't, you know, I bought GM.com.
Was it called parking or something like that?
But I'm not GM.
you could argue it's similar to that cyber squatting.
There was cyber squatting, right.
In terms of enforcing it. Mm-hmm. But in theory, a patent, you know, you can't go out and get a patent on something that is so obvious or something that other people are manufacturing. So in theory, at one point in time, whoever got that patent actually had to have a novel idea. So it's a little bit distinguishable from just knowing exactly where the market is going and grabbing that. But yes, it is sitting back, hoping that someone goes into that area and wants what you have, even though you're not doing anything.
Okay, but now let's say, let's divide them between them and yourself, for instance. You are there to defend your client's patent in a process that they're developing, in chemical engineering, for instance.
Sure.
A paint for a car, whatever it may be. So they're actually putting the paint out. That's one class of, if you will, patent, and then the people who protect that. And then you have this other group of people. And there have been efforts to try to stop that or to reform that. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. Where are we in that process?
Well, there's some good news and some bad news. The good news is there's essentially a lot of these startup LLCs that will come up with 500 different umbrella companies, all with the same patents that they hold.
Yeah.
And they'll send out a million demand letters to everyone they think may be infringing, and it's frustrated a lot of people. So some individual states...
Excuse me, and part of the thing is it's almost like, you wouldn't call it a blackmail, would it be like, that they will go after you legally, and if they have a big enough war chest, they can go after a small company, and the company says, that's it, we can't afford to be in court forever.
They'll send a letter and say, give me $10,000 or I'm going to sue you for $5 million. Mm-hmm. And even if I don't win, you're going to spend more than $10,000 defending this lawsuit.
Exactly. Okay.
A lot of people do look at it like blackmail.
No, okay. So I wasn't too far off in my term. I didn't want to be too strong. So what's the good news?
The good news, there was an act in Congress. The bad news is it was sort of withdrawn or put on hold recently. There have been two recent Supreme Court decisions in the last month or so that have essentially made it easier to slap down a patent troll if you're a defendant in terms of fee shifting and making them pay your legal bills and things like that. And so the ball has moved, even though that the legislation in Congress has been killed.
Yeah. By the way, folks, I posted one of our news items this week was about Senator Patrick Leahy, who was the head of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. And apparently there had been broad, and in fact, overwhelming bipartisan support for the patent reform bill in the House. The White House was ready to sign it. And when it got to Leahy, he just said, no, I don't think we're ever going to come to an agreement on this, and he torpedoed it, took it off the docket.
There's a lot of lobbyists, and for some good reason, because, you know, it's hard to have a one-size-fits-all legislation for patent trolls.
Of course.
Because when you want to talk about a non-practicing entity, you're essentially defining every garage inventor and every university that tries to come up with a new invention and then license it.
Universities were the big ones who were fighting that, weren't they?
Right. So U of M, as an example, has a tech transfer office where they'll take all of their inventions internally. Mm-hmm. They're not making and selling any products at the university. They're just trying to license their IP.
Right.
So in theory, they're a patent troll.
And IP would be intellectual property?
Correct.
Okay.
Including patents.
Right, right.
And so in that context, they could be viewed as a patent troll.
Okay.
Now, it's not the universities of the world who are out sending all these demand letters.
No.
But they also, of course, got on the lobbying circuit.
Yeah.
And I think that that's essentially why this was put on hold.
If you go to internetadvisor.net and go down to our news items for today, I have entitled it, Senator Leahy Kills Patent Reform for Now. And it's an article that was written by the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, I think it is.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think they're advocates for, they're advocates for net neutrality and especially going after patent trolls who have been, Electronic Frontier Foundation. Yep. So you want to read more in depth on that and kind of the political background on that. On Monday, was it Tuesday that we had the verdict come down? The Apple and Samsung decided to stop the patent battle that they had going on in court, am I right?
Well,
or was it earlier?
Apple and Google have come to an agreement. Apple and Samsung have returned to the negotiation table, but they've not yet emerged.
But they're saying bad things to one another. The lawyers are saying bad things to one another, Randy.
They are. They're saying a lot of bad things outside of court, and I don't think it's helping the negotiation much.
What's up with that? You're a lawyer. But is it just they're going for more hours or what?
Samsung's attorney is trying to refer to this battle by Apple as Apple's Vietnam, and Apple is trying to take those comments as saying that, obviously Samsung's not serious about negotiating with us because look at these kind of comments and just a lot of posturing.
Traditionally, it's been said that Samsung opens these lawsuits up and drags them out for long periods of time so they can, while the lawsuit is going on, they can still continue to take advantage of the technology that they may be suing in that particular patent. And then once it gets to a point where, you know, it's not worth it anymore to them, then they'll go ahead and settle for it. Well, heck, by that time, they probably made $1 billion off of whatever it was, and so it's no problem to sell for it.
Well, they did certainly have an interest in some of the initial litigation to try to drag it out just so that they couldn't be forced to stop selling their phones.
Some of the early
States,
ones, some of the early models.
As you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. Do you see, as a patent lawyer, and I'm taking you as a, I'm going to call you a serious patent lawyer in the sense of you have clients who are actually producing these kind of products. Do you see any hope for reform in this? Or is it, because it looks like there's so much money in Washington right now, in the on the lobby side, that it's going to be next to impossible. Even though you got all the political will, the House and the White House, it can get torpedoed at the last minute with a simple Judiciary Committee decision.
Well, unfortunately, I think that we're going to see a slight pause now that this has been put back on the back burner. But I am confident that we're going to see some legislation either at the state level or at the federal level to try to finally put a stop to some of these trolls.
In the state of Michigan, how are we doing? I mean, what's the state of our business here? Because this seems so critical to us. We're at a point where, like, we're almost getting off the ground here in terms of technology, especially technology, et cetera.
Well, I can't say that Michigan has been a leader in proposing new legislation to stop patent trolls, but other states have, and they've typically done it under the guise of consumer protection type laws. And they essentially say, if you are a patent troll who's sending these demand letters to businesses in our state and you're not doing any of the due diligence before you're sending out these letters and you're just trying to extract a settlement, then you're violating these consumer protection laws because you're not doing enough research to actually.
But we don't have those in Michigan? We don't have that kind of bite?
Not yet.
Wow. I mean, it would seem like that would be a real priority in terms of our legislature because of our being in this delicate position of building this, you know, technology hub that we have here. You know, Gary, I know you're involved in a lot of the stuff that's going on here as well in terms of technology.
I think they're really focused on the grand bargain to get Detroit out of bankruptcy, and they're focused on roads. Yeah. And there's probably a few people that will put a few cycles into patent reform, but you know, I think there's a lot bigger fish to fry here.
Yeah.
That's just my impression.
Vermont was one of the first states, and quite frankly, you know, once the initial bill in the U.S. Congress seemed to have so much bipartisan support, I think it was easy for the states at that point in time to say, well, this is going to get fixed at the federal level, so it doesn't need to be a concern of ours in the short-term future. Mm.
And in fact, it should be fixed there. It shouldn't be by state by state.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Randy, thanks so much for being in with us today. It was just good to have somebody who is involved in this at the ground floor level. Randy Peck is a patent lawyer with Warder, Norcross, and Judd in Southfield. There's a longer interview that I did with Randy earlier on after the Samsung and Apple decision came down that I'm going to be posting as well that you can listen to at length. Randy, thanks so much for coming in and being part of this.
Thank you, Foster. My pleasure.
All right, back in just a moment to talk about iChallenged. Well, Gary, you know, over the years, Gary Baker, you and I have had the pleasure of speaking to a number of people who were involved in helping the blind. And that is because radio and WJR, our flagship station here, has been such a friend to the blind.
Well,
their window on the world.
It is. That's exactly what we called it. And, you know, Ted Lennox has been great over many, many years. I still remember the story of when his brother and him were out playing golf.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, he was hitting pretty well, apparently, but somehow his brother kept saying his golf ball was in the woods. I don't know how that worked. But anyway, and it was Ted that introduced us to John Whitaker.
And John is in studio with us here. John, thank you so much for joining us here at WJR.
I'm delighted to be here.
Well, John, we have known him for quite a while, and John and I have worked in some other areas. But, John, you are with iChallenged.org. And, again, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you find out about that. And you have a great event coming up called Walk to End Blindness. Do two things for me. First of all, quickly, what is iChallenged?
Well, iChallenged is a nonprofit, and we center on helping people who have vision issues, anywhere from as simple as a need for a pair of glasses to see properly, to if they're losing their sight to some disease, trying to intervene for the underinsured or the uninsured in a way to preserve their sight. And ultimately, if they lose their sight, we're into re-empowering them through technology so they can go on and have a complete life.
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
Now, John, when we first met you, you were working for Ford as an engineer, if I recall correctly. Is that right? And you were volunteering at that time. This is something different, though. When did this start?
Well, actually, it started in 2010, and there's a little bit of history here. I'll make it very short. The Optometric Clinic of Detroit was located right across the street from here.
Right.
And I worked with them developing training programs with Dr. Bernard Miller, rehab programs. And they had to close their doors due to financing issues. Mm. And we, Dr. Miller and I, wanted to see that continue, the efforts for the Detroit area. Mm-hmm. And so we set up iChallenge.
Okay.
And iChallenge continued on with the philosophy of the Optometric Institute and Clinic of Detroit in helping the uninsured and underinsured who had vision problems. And we help about 250 people a year right now. About 125 people through training.
Mm-hmm.
And about 125 people through surgical procedures to preserve their sight.
Right. Wonderful, too. As a matter of fact, you and I did a series of interviews, video interviews about that, and I need to get the link to that so I can put it up on our homepage here so people can see some of those videos.
All right.
Because they're fascinating. Matter of fact, some of the people who were in studio with us, Gary, were also part of that, and you mentioned training. Jesse, I'd like to introduce you. Jesse is with us in here studio at Jesse Lowe. You are one of the trainers with iChallenge, right?
Yes.
Okay. A little bit about your background and what kind of training you do there.
Well, I've been working with iChallenge for about 6 years now, 7 years. And primarily I teach JAWS, which is a screen reader.
Right.
I also teach Zoom Text, Magic, Windows Magnification, and I also teach Dragon Naturally Speaking and Windows Speech Recognition.
And as a little bit of background, you have a condition called albinism,
yes.
Right? Which has affected your eyes?
Yes. It affects my hair, eyes, and skin. So I have no pigmentation.
Okay.
And that condition makes me very sensitive to light, and my overall visual acuity, I'm considered a high partial.
So, in other words, you are somebody who has experienced these challenges, and the software that you're teaching people about using is stuff that you've used yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay, and that's really the value, John, of this, that you've got people who've experienced this kind of thing who are using this technology. I want to talk about somebody else who's here, because she is a client and came to you as somebody looking for help. That's Mary Coomer. Mary, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I love your smile, and I wish it transmitted through the radio, but I think you'll hear it, folks. Mary is just a lovely lady. Mary, what was the challenge that you faced and brought you to iChallenge?
Well, I have macular degeneration, so I can't see centrally, faces, vehicles. I only can see peripherally.
Right.
Therefore, I couldn't drive or read. And it started with my Dr.
Pull your
Miller.
Microphone a little closer. To, there you go. There
it started
go.
With Dr. Miller, who actually diagnosed me and was very helpful with telling me all the technology I can use.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to do the walk to M-Linus because, first of all, I'm not pitiful. I am not.
Good for you.
I am not. I am powerful.
You are, Liz.
Just because I can't see does not mean I
wish you could see the twinkle in her eye.
Well, she can see me because I'm off to the side here.
I refuse to give up. I can do Good anything beer. I could do before except drive. And that's only now. One day I can do that because I'll have self-driving cars.
I love it. Yeah, right. Google, here we go.
So you really want to use all this technology, right?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay, good. And that's really the value, John and Jesse. You guys bring technology to solve this problem.
We do. And really, it's amazing. I just see so much remarkable change in people for the positive when they're given access to these technologies, which empower them and show them that they can go on with a very full life, very complete life, a competitive life with these technologies.
So, Mary, what has it done for you?
Oh, John Whitaker taught me computers, which with JAWS has been remarkable because without it, I would never have been able to organize the walk. And thank God I was given a great sponsor, Premier Medical Massage, who's been all proceeds we raise is going 100% to iChallenge.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The technology for me has been phenomenal. I know I'm going to start college so I can work because I'm a worker.
I love it.
And I walk every day anyways. I usually walk about 4 miles every morning. And I figured walk, earn money for Eye Challenge to help people that can't see. Because I also wasn't insured when I found out I had this eye disease. But there's nothing they can do for me anyways.
No. But you aren't alone in that. That very often it strikes us. And you're a younger woman, you know, and to have that happen, you don't expect it to be something that would come maybe later in life.
Yes, way
and
later in life.
My father, when he was 82, died, had macular degeneration and could not see, period. And he had been suffering for about 10 years. But so you kind of think of it as something that happens later in life.
Yes.
And here to hit you earlier. Now, tell me about the Walk for Life. Walk to End Blindness.
To walk is free. We're going to have a concession stand. All money that we sell from the concession stand is going to Eye Challenge. We're going to have bagpipes there in the evening. We're going to follow them around the park. There's going to be some jewelry sold there, and I'm just hoping that everyone will join me and come to the walk.
Okay, and John, that's going to be when?
Well, it's June 7th, starting at 7 in the morning and running to the next morning of June 8th at 7 in the morning.
Oh,
It's an all-day, all-night affair.
Oh, wonderful. And where will it be? Where will it be taking place?
Well, it'll be at Shiawassee Park in Farmington. And that's on June 7th, so Saturday at 7 in the morning, away you go. And there's going to be lots of things there. There's going to be a DJ with music and treats and clowns, hopefully.
Now, John, the money for this, where will this go? And to Eye Challenged?
It will go to Eye Challenged, and Eye Challenged will use it to help more people in terms of surgical to save their sight. Mm. And also, we hope that we will be able to take on a few people that can't otherwise get help for training. To be empowered by the technology.
Oh, so important. We have people calling, asking about, you know, questions very often, even in our listener calling questions about JAWS and about these kind of technologies. And we always refer them back to you guys at iChallenge.org. Again, folks, if you go to our homepage, InternetAdvisor.net, and you look under this beautiful logo, by the way, that was developed for the Walk to End Blindness, you get a link to the site that will give you the information about this walk that starts on June the 7th at 7 in the morning, and it goes to 7 in the morning on the June the 8th the next day. It's going to be in Shiawassee Park in Farmington. You can find out more information about that by going to the webpage. By the way, the webpage is what's the word, Gary? It's developed specially for readers.
It's reader-friendly.
Reader-friendly, that's what I wanted to say, yeah.
Screen reader-friendly.
Special accessibility.
Right, Jesse, so that JAWS can read a page like that much more easily then, right?
Yes.
And, you know, if people are listening to us and they have a question, there's a whole second hour to our show. Get those questions in early. We don't know how long we can keep John and Jesse around here, but, feel free to give us a call.
All right, yes, and our second hour, we'll have the phone lines open at 800-859-0957, and you can call in at that time. If you have a specific question about the walk or about the services that are offered through the folks at iChallenged.org. Now, is Ted Lennox still involved as well?
Absolutely. Ted is on our board of directors. And always keeps a sharp eye on me.
Well, please give him our best. He is such a wonderful man.
Absolutely.
It's always a ball. And Mary, I love the energy that you bring to this thing, too. Especially, I like the part you said, I will not be pitied.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm powerful. You are right.
I am.
You're powerful, not pitiful. And Jesse, thank you so much for the work that you do training.
Thank you.
How many people are you training right now, do you think, in your program?
How many people?
Yeah, are you handling right now?
Probably a good 6 or 7 clients.
Excellent. We'll see if we can add a few more to you as well. Hey, those folks, all again working with iChallenge.org. John Whitaker, thanks so much for being here.
Great.
Hey, folks, a quick break. When we come back, Mike Brennan has MI Tech News headlines and a tip for you. It's that time of the program where we check on the headlines from MITechNews.com along with Mr. Mike Brennan, who's talking to us from the west side of Michigan. Mike, how you doing out there on this Memorial Day weekend?
Great, Foster. Been real busy, but it's a really finally nice weather, so what the heck, right?
Absolutely. We're starting to be blessed with a lovely weekend here. Well, Mike, let's dig into your headlines. And matter of fact, your top headline turns back to a company that has been a very big technology anchor for Detroit, and that's CompuWare.
Yeah, they're probably our biggest pure-play technology company in the state. And they're at their financial analysis on Thursday, where they talk about their quarterly results. They talked about the possibility of splitting the company. Well, they're not even really sure what they're going to do, whether it'll be two separate companies, two divisions. But anyway, long and the short of it, one will focus on the mainframe business, and the other will focus on applications performance management.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll guess we'll know more as they move forward on this.
And it, I imagine positive news in terms of the company and it's staying in Detroit and thriving here, I hope.
Yeah, and part of this is, you know, they've been under a lot of pressure from various investor groups to turn in better performance, mm-hmm. and they think this might be one way to do it.
Okay. Now, next headline I saw there is that Michigan Cyber Corps is officially launching. What is the Michigan Civilian Cyber Corps?
Well, it's sort of a SWAT team for when we have a really bad cyber attack, and it's going to be a variety of folks. It'll be state IT folks. It'll be National Guard. It'll be, you know, Michigan State Police.
Mm-hmm.
All these groups that have a part of this now will coordinate better under David Behan, our good friend David,
that's right,
on the show. And they're going to have a training event for this in July where they'll kind of work the bugs out of it. But this is something the governor announced, a year or two ago. He was going to do that.
Gary, he talked about it when he was with us, didn't he?
Yeah, well, it was announced last on October,
right,
at the Michigan Cybersecurity event.
Yep. Are these kind of like Minutemen, like the old Revolutionary War?
Yeah,
kind of?
They're volunteers. They're from different companies, as Michael talked about. And there's not only that, but there's a number of other efforts that kind of go beyond that with the companies themselves. But this is all going to be part of what the cyber range from Merit, right?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things the governor really wants to do is make Michigan a very big cybersecurity state. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have a lot of expertise here.
Yep.
We, you know, we can build businesses around that. He's really pushing that.
I love that. And we had our old friends Jan Nessen, Online Technologies, which is now even branching outside of the state. You reported on that last week. Hey, coming back to the state, matter of fact, around the Ann Arbor area, Ann Arbor Spark, something that Gary knows about, is about to launch a virtual business advisor group in June.
Yeah, they haven't released a lot of details on it, but they're going to be working with the Ann Arbor Chamber. Probably Gary knows more about it than I do. What are you hearing on that, Gary?
Just that they're going to get started here very soon, and they've, you know, it's kind of another piece of the puzzle that they've been putting together for a number of years since Mike Finney was there.
And they've lost, well, they've got $148 million in new investments. Yep. Did I see that, Mike?
Yeah. And they were doing their annual report, and that's where this information came out.
Oh, I see.
They've created, they say, 1,500 some odd jobs. They've worked with 274 startups, incubated 83 companies. You know, all that stuff you typically see.
Yeah,
they're certainly one of the more active,
absolutely,
regional economic development groups in the state.
Well, folks, when you get MI Tech News, part of what we want to do with these headlines is to show you the kind of things you're talking about, which is on, you know, big news for the state in terms of our economy, the cyber core that's being developed, you know, preparing for possible disasters, and then also for those of you who have businesses, yeah, to hear about things like the Ann Arbor Spark that's out there, where they are very much into helping businesses get off the ground, incubating them, and getting them going. And that's a good deal of what you will find out if you will simply go to internetadvisor.net and just scroll down the page and look for that subscribe button that's under Mike's smiling face. It costs you $0.00, and in every Friday you will get not just these few headlines, but a whole bunch more delivered to your computer through email, and you can go into depth with whichever ones you want. If you, for instance, are an entrepreneur, or if you're looking for other people to get together with, there's lots of gatherings that Mike will let you know about, as well as things going on a legislative level and other important things, like, for instance, the expansion of Warner Norcross, which is opening another business office in Kalamazoo, I understand.
Yeah, they're going to assign 4 attorneys down there. In fact, they hired 4 new people. And they're going to plug them into that office. And they're certainly one of the largest law firms in the state. And, of course, we get a lot of our intellectual property advice from them. So, a good firm.
Matter of fact, we have one of them with us right now. As a matter of fact, Randy Peck has been in studio. We're talking about trolls and dealing with them. And, Randy, this is good news for your company and the expansion.
Yeah, I'm very excited. It's our 8th office in the state of Michigan. And, you know, we're able to serve more people in the local Kalamazoo community now, and it's exciting.
And that's a big pharmaceutical area, am I right?
It is, yes.
You know, so that's the import with biotech going on in that area?
Yeah, and Stryker's out there. Pfizer used to be out there, and there is a lot of healthcare business, certainly.
Now, Randy, with your chemical engineering undergree, undergraduate degree, you're not transferring out to that office, are you? Because that would be a logical thing, right?
We did also recently open an office in Midland, so I do split my time Midland because, as I'm sure you know, there's quite a little bit industry up there.
Yeah, a little bit of chemical industry up there, too.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, what do you know?
Well, we want to have him on to confirm that and to talk a little bit about that as well, Mike. Thank you so much, Mike, for MI Tech News. They cover all these things that are going on in the state of Michigan, the challenges and some of the really good news that's going on there as well. And again, folks, it's simple as pie for you to get this news delivered to you directly. Go to internetadvisor.net and click on that the button that says just to subscribe here. Mike, thanks so much and enjoy this great Memorial Day weekend.
Thanks, Foster. Thanks, Gary, Randy.
Hey,
have a good one.
You too, Mike.
All right, thank you. Hey, we have Eddie Rudell in here. And Ed, you know, at this time of the program, we have the tips, tricks, and giveaways. And you had an experience this week that I thought you just had to share. And then, Randy, hang on, because I wanted you to talk a little bit about a troll experience that you have. But go ahead.
Well, this week, my wife handed me a laptop from one of her friends and picked it up really cheap. Yeah, I can get it working for you. Oh, I have a spare hard drive. No big deal. And it kept on crashing on me. And then I took the thing apart, as I usually do, and start reseating things. And I noticed this, one of the largest hairballs I've ever seen in my life, in a laptop. And it wasn't, I could tell it was a tabby cat because I started sneezing right away. You know, what's nice is that the manufacturers of laptops, you know, on the bottom where you put your memory chips, a lot of the laptop manufacturers are making those panels much larger. And also what they're doing is they provide the ability for you to find your fan for your unit. Mm-hmm. And it's usually just to, you know, remove the battery, remove the bottom plate, and the fan will be exposed there.
Yeah.
They do not typically have a filter on them. So if you see something that looks like a filter, that's probably carpet fibers, cat hair, and dog hair, and that should be removed, and your laptop will usually start performing much better.
It's a hairy problem, as you said. Yeah. But one of the things you said, too, was funny. Tell them about the conductivity of the hair. That was funny.
I was amazed.
Leave it to Ed to look at this.
When I was putting it, you know, the fan should have worked and it didn't, and so I took it apart completely, and basically the copper wires, the inductors,
the windings
of the thing were exposed, and it was filled with cat hair as well. And I'm like, why would this stop it? Because as soon as I cleaned it up, the thing started working. I grabbed the cat hair and I took my ohm meter to it, and it conducted electricity. So that's why the fan wasn't working. All those fans I've been disposing of probably are just stuffed with cat hair. I took a conductivity test of my hair. I got no conductivity in my hair. Yeah. It's all those cats grooming themselves and licking themselves, and then the dander and stuff like that. It makes them conductive, and it shorted out the fan.
Moral of the story is, if you do have a pet and you have your computer kind of fouling up and overheating, it could very well be that. I've seen that, for instance, with a lot of desktops, which sit near the floor and suck up air down there.
Yeah, and what I was afraid of was it burned out the motor, but that was not the case.
But this is a laptop.
Yes,
this
it
is
was. Laptop.
Brandy, can you hang around for the beginning of the next hour? Because I want to have you tell that. Go, he will. He can tell that troll story. It's just a great one to tell. Randy's a patent attorney, and he had a great troll story. But we'll start that with this next hour. Oh, and by the way, that'll be just until we get your phone calls at 800-859-0957. If you have a question for the folks from iChallenge about their services for the blind, they're going to stick around for a little while, too. So, again, that's 800-859-0957. You call in right now. It's a great time to call on this holiday weekend because there's not many people hanging around, and your call will get right straight through to us. We got lots of experts here to answer your questions, and if you have questions for iChallenge, they're here as well. 800-859-0957. The second hour of the Internet Advisor is all yours.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Hello there, Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Kel Carson, Shane Hamlin, and a whole cast of characters in here to help answer your questions, because this is your hour. That's when your calls sets the agenda for our program. And here's the number, 800-859-0957. That's all it takes, toll free from anywhere you're hearing my voice, 800-859-0957. And Harry and Gerald, we got you lined up. We'll be talking with you and hearing some of the other folks here in the studio also talking about the Walk to End Blindness. Well, folks, as I said, this is our your hour, actually, when you guys get to call. And men and ladies out there, give us a call at 800-859-0957. You set the agenda. Ask whatever you need to do. We're going to be talking about moving folders from Windows to Macs and capturing YouTube videos on Windows 8.1, among other things. But whatever you happen to set. We also have some special folks in studio with us. Randy Peck is with us. He is a patent attorney with Warner Norcross and Judd. And Randy, one of the reasons I wanted you to stick around was just to tell the story you told during the break, because we wonder, you know, what are patent trolls? People hear about that. You can give people a practical example of how
sure.
they work.
Yeah, you know, to put it into context, if you're a small business owner, for example, who's not even necessarily involved with innovation or invention or the patent industry, and you think you're safe from patent trolls, that's not necessarily the case. One of the more infamous examples that really gave patent trolls a bad name was a company that somehow got a patent to a method of using a scanner and scanning a document and sending it directly to your email address.
Good Lord.
And, of course, the issue is they can't go after HP or Samsung, who make those scanners, because the patent's not infringed until someone actually goes to use the scanner.
Ah.
So it's the purchaser of the scanner
infringing. Oh, my goodness.
And not Xerox and HP. And so this company would send off letters to essentially every business in the country, as far as I know, that had a certain requisite number of employees. And they would say, hey, you're a business with 50 employees. We assume you must have a scanner based on your size. We assume you must use this feature on your scanner. So if you don't pay us $1,000 per employee, we're going to sue you in federal court for patent infringement.
I think I got one of those letters one time.
Seriously?
When I had a little business going, and I received that letter. You got to be, and I was one person, and you're kidding.
My Lord.
So they rarely ever sued because they didn't want the validity contested, and they didn't want to pay the fees associated with litigation. But if you send out 1,000 of those letters, and even 100 people pay you money,
That's the shakedown.
That's how the
shakedown works.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like that same saying, guns don't kill people, people kill people. So the manufacturers that manufacture the guns, you know, you can't sue them. You got to go after the people that actually use the weapons and kill people.
Well, then, Randy, I have to ask you the dumb question. Is that illegal?
Well, it wasn't. That was the company in particular that led to some of the new statewide legislation to try to clamp down on that. And they said, if you're just sending a letter saying you assume they're infringing, That's a violation of consumer protection laws.
Right. And you haven't done the due diligence yourself.
Correct.
You're asking them, in essence, to incriminate themselves so that they can be sued.
And so this example in particular I found very interesting because so many people got this letter that there was sort of a movement on the internet through crowdsourcing and trying to come together against this common enemy.
Wow.
And so it got to the point where there was pooling of resources, and it ultimately pulled in both HP and Xerox, who felt the moral obligation to then challenge the validity of that at the patent office, which is still ongoing.
Wow.
So even though they weren't directly implicated in this business, they're the ones selling the products, and so they took the lead.
Going after their customers.
Right.
Blading their customers. Oh, my goodness. That's a practical example, folk, of what a patent troll is and how you deal with them. Freddie, thank you very much for that. Okay, here's the phone number again, 800-859-0957. Let's go to our first caller. That's Harry out in Port Huron. Hi, Harry. How you doing?
Good, guys, and thank you for everything, and thank you for the information about JAWS and the other things that you mentioned in the first hour.
Oh, good. And by the way, those folks are still around from iChallenge if you have a specific question for them, but go ahead.
My question is, I'm considering going to the Mac from Windows, and because I like the VoiceOver screen reader, and it's reads everything that's built right in, which I like. But I've got files, I've got folders, just like anybody else does, and I got folders, and I want to be able to plug my thumb drive into my Mac and be able to, you know, open up those folders and get into that. Am I going to have to do that, or can I do that? Or somebody was telling me I'd have to reformat the thumb drive and everything else.
Cal?
No, nothing at all. It's really quite right. How old is your Mac?
It's going to be brand new. I'm getting it brand new.
He has a Windows machine. He's going to a Mac.
Okay, no problem. The thing that they're probably getting confused on is this. A Mac can read and write Windows files as long as the thumb drive is not formatted as NTFS.
Okay.
So if it's in FAT32 or extended FAT, it can read it. It can read it if it's NTFS. It just can't write it if it's NTFS.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and take that thumb drive, stick it into your Windows machine, move all the folders you want onto that thumb drive, and then after you do that, put into your Mac and copy them over into your Mac with no problem at all.
Okay. So after I copy them over there, I don't know if they're NTFS or what they are in Windows, but am I going to be able, it sounds like I wouldn't be able to go in and edit them.
No, the issue doesn't sound like...
Well, it depends on what files you're copying, yeah. for one, okay? Right. What type of files do you plan on copying?
I've got some .txt, and then I've got some RTFs, and I've got some .docx's.
And none of those will be a problem as long as you have... are you going to use Office on your Mac like you're using them on Windows to correct those, create those files?
Not sure yet. I'm either going to use Office or the text edit.
Okay. You should have no problem at all opening up any of those documents using with your machine. You're going to get a free program, a suite called iWork. And mm-hmm. in there you'll have a program called Pages, which is the word processing program. And all those file formats that you mentioned, you should be able to open up in Pages.
Super.
And if you
want to
work,
guys, you save me a lot of hassle, and it's going to be worth it.
Well, Harry, in addition to that, by the way, if you do want to work with the Office programs, you can, for instance, sign up for them to, for instance, for Office 365 Home, which will allow you to download the whole Office suite, the entire Office suite, onto your Mac.
Right.
And you can use that there as well. And it's like, what was it, $10 a month?
Yeah.
Right, Shane?
I think it's $6 a month.
$6 a month,
if
okay.
Just
the basic one.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so you've got that option as well. But as Cal said, iWork comes with the new Macs, right?
Yeah, because he's buying a new Mac, he'll get iWorks with it free. That'll give him Pages, Numbers, which is the spreadsheet program, and Keynote, which is your presentation program.
So you've got you're covering on all the bases. Okay, Harry?
Thank you guys very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to have your call. And for anybody else out there who's looking for help, we got lots of it in here. 800-859-0957. Hey, listen, it's a great time to call here on the holiday weekend. You won't be standing in line. 800-859-0957. Back to take your calls in just a moment. Welcome. It's the Internet Advisor. Hour number two is your hour. That's when your calls set the agenda for our program. And we do hope you'll take advantage of that at 800-859-0957. That's our toll-free number. And the lines are open for you right now. Shane.
Yes, yes, sir.
You have an event coming up at your store.
I do.
That is kind of a neat one. Tell us a little bit about what's going on this weekend and where.
Well, on the 30th and 31st of May this month, next weekend, Friday and Saturday,
mm-hmm.
we are going to be opening up our doors to our customers and listeners as well to come in and drop off, kind of do some spring cleaning. You know, it's garage sale season. Salvation Army and a lot of these other Purple Heart won't take computers like they did once before.
Yes.
They just don't do it. So you can't throw them away. They won't take them. Bring them to us, and we'll recycle them for you.
So where is us?
We're Comptech Services on Shaner 19 Southeast Corner in Sterling Heights, and you can find us online. You come on down. We're all day Friday from mm-hmm. 10 to 6, and on Saturday from 10 to 2. Bring your advice. And you know what? If you've got an old machine, an XP machine or a Vista machine, and you want to get into a Windows 8 or a 7 machine, bring it down, recycle it. We'll give you a $30 credit to get to get you in there.
That's cool.
Just to help.
Pretty cool. Okay.
So,
by the way, to find out more about where Shane is, we have a special feature on our homepage, right near the very bottom, and it's called Computer Shops You Trust. And what this is, it's a collection of places you've told us about. These are our computer shops in your neighborhoods that you've dealt with and that you are confident that the people deal with you well there. We take your recommendations, by the way, and we'll check them out, of course. But
well, sometimes we can't check them out. They're too far away. So we just put them up,
yep,
right? So
exactly.
We don't,
what we want
we don't
is to have like
them.
A personal recommendation rather than just kind of a name thrown out there. And people like you do take the time to do that. So if you go to the bottom of that page, you'll find, for instance, the Lakeside Convenience Store out in Michigan Center, Michigan. You'll also find PC Gladiators on Wayne Road in Livonia, Icon Computer Solutions in Wayne, Tecoso Computer Solutions in Ferndale, AI Tech Services in Farmington, and CompTech Services in Sterling Heights. So if you know of a place that you really trust, you think these guys do a great job and you want to have other people know about it, please send us that information. We'll list it there, and it's called Computer Shops You Trust. And we hope that you will dive in and take advantage of that. Don from Shelby Township, how may we help you on the Internet Advisor?
I have a 10-year-old Dell computer, and I have a wireless keyboard that I bought with the computer, so that's 10 years old also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was typing on it, and a letter would come up, and then it would miss a few letters, and another letter would come up. And now, when I type on it, nothing happens. you know, no letters come up. And I was just wondering, because there's something I could do to get my keyboard to work again.
So it may be that keyboards are pretty cheap today.
Well, he's using a wireless keyboard, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did you try changing the batteries?
Yes, I did that.
Did you try taking the receiver that's plugged in the USB port for that out of the computer, rebooting the computer, and then sticking the receiver back in and pressing the little red connect button on that and then the one on the keyboard?
No, I didn't. So, I'm kind of like in kindergarten on the computers. Yeah, there was a receiver in that since it was, I just thought it was some magic, you know?
Yeah, generally on the back of the computer, if it's a desktop, in one of the USB ports, you'll see something that looks like a thumb drive sticking out of it. And I'm going to guess that the brand of your keyboard is Logitech?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Yeah, right. On the back, you'll see that little device stuck in the back of the computer, and it'll say Logitech on it. It'll have a little red button on it for connect as well.
Oh, okay.
So try doing that. Or if you have, do you have, you know, cats or anything in the house?
I have what?
Do you have any pets in the house?
No.
Okay. Or grandchildren. Because sometimes
they act the same, do they?
sometimes they get in the back of the computer and they knock that little thing out of it, and so therefore it won't receive anymore. But try doing that first and see if that'll fix it.
Okay, so I unplug that connection and then turn the computer off?
Yes.
And then?
Turn the computer back on.
Uh-huh.
And then put that little connector back into the USB port that you pulled it out of.
Uh-huh.
And then press the little button on that on that little connector.
Okay, I will definitely give that a try.
And you know, Don, I'm going to step in and give you the real technical way to fix this. Turn it upside down and tap on it, you know, like with your fingers. Get all the crumbs and stuff out of there. There might be a crumb or two in the receptors of the keys.
Yeah, I'd say 10 years worth.
I kind of did. Turn it upside down and shake it.
And bang it on the keyboard or the desk a little bit. I mean, you know, it's not going to hurt it too bad as long as you don't smash it now.
Sure.
Okay, don't do it immediately after supper because you're going to turn your stomach over.
Yes.
Because usually, if you're like me, you find eyelashes,
small children, small children,
yeah, dust bunnies. Yeah.
Yeah, small children and all kinds of quarters. You never know what you'll find in there. But and the good news is, the good news about this whole thing is keyboards are, well, you know, are cheap. $39, you get a combo, and you're done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but the wireless, by the way, is wonderful. It's way to go.
Yeah,
really neat. I got to tell you about a little.
Although you know, my keyboard has problems because it's inaccurate a lot of the time too. You know, it misspells words sometimes.
Yes.
You know, all sorts of things. So misses a punctuation.
Oh, the older I get, the jumpier
really.
I get. That happens more and more
misses
often.
Misses punctuation marks sometimes. Yeah.
You know, it's funny too because some of these, you know, these optical mice, these laser optical mice. You'll have some where you'll see the mouse just jumping all over the place, and it's not going where you want it to go.
Yeah.
And some of these, you look in there, you got a little teeny hair
stuck
way
it.
In the yeah. light sensor.
Yep.
And you get a little tweezer, and you can pull it out.
Do you remember, boom, folks, the days when you used to have to take that mouse apart,
and
there would be
ball
a ball of hair wound around the ball. Around the ball, right?
You had to scrape the little... Rollers, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So I didn't know that would happen with the optical mice, too.
Yeah, there's a little teeny right. trap... little recess in there, and those hair, arm hair, whatever,
and that's all that's needed.
One better than that for you, uh-oh. Foster. I had a client said my mouse stopped working. It was working fine the other day. It stopped working. I went over to her house. She had an optical mouse.
Uh-huh.
She had just gotten a glass top for her desk, and it wouldn't reflect the light back properly.
That's so true. And you do, it'll tell you, you know, you need to have something underneath that will block the light from passing through. I have a glass desk as well. If you get off, the mouse is gone. Can't see a thing.
Awesome.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, Don, for your call. I'm glad we were able to give you a little bit of help here.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely going to try both methods.
All right. Have yourself a good day, okay?
Take care.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. All right. Number again?
Oh, go ahead.
It's 800-859-0957. That's a toll-free 800-859-0957. Hey, first come, first serve, and we have a lot of room here. We'd love to talk with you.
Foster, yeah. I was just going to mention that, you know, Memorial Day weekend, everybody's out driving.
Mm-hmm.
I know you use Waze, right?
I love Waze.
I do, too.
W-A-Z-E.
Like, does anybody else here, you guys?
Yeah, I do. With the lady I carpool with, and that's ideal. When you have a passenger that can look at it, so you don't have to glance at it when you're driving.
Yeah, that's
it's a free download from Google. It's a Google application.
For your smartphone.
And, for your smartphone.
It's probably...
It's for navigation. Yep. And what I love about Waze, in particular for travel, and Cal, we were talking at the break about applications can help you when you're on the road. I'm going to be using that. I have to go up and visit my... we're going to go up and visit on Memorial Day. Our twin granddaughter is up at CMU. And Waze is wonderful because not only does it show you where you are and the different, the highways, it shows you where the traffic blocks are. It shows you your speed that you're traveling and whether you're, you know, in or out of, you know, alignment with what the speed limit is. And it's just a great...
It's great. You know, there's... There, you actually can report problems and
yes,
whatnot.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about it is that you can actually say there's a very simple little button you can click even when you're driving without a lot of distraction. It simply says it's heavy traffic here,
right?
Or there's an accident on the side of the road or whatever.
Maybe a police officer. There's a button.
Yes.
We'll mention that one so loudly, but there's a button like that too.
There's a lot of caterpillars ahead, as we say.
Yes.
So as you use it, you see all these different graphical symbols that represent accidents and or slow traffic, and we just call them caterpillars.
Yep. Yeah,
you know, it. They did a survey in prep for this big driving weekend. 35% of those that answered the survey said that having a smartphone makes them a more efficient driver. Obviously, Waze is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
More than 38% of respondents said that they would give up watching their favorite sport team in exchange for no traffic for a year. You know, I think I'm there. It could be 39%. I'm right there. If I had no traffic.
All right, folks, and that is Waze, W-A-Z-E. A little later on in the program, I'm going to tell you about a great Nokia application for travel that's like that. It's a Nokia Drive, which is just incredible. A lot like that Waze, and it's free as well with those of you who have Windows phones. Barbara from Monroe, we'll be back to take your call in just a moment when we come back. Hey, time for me to salute the folks behind the glass again. Annie, thank you so much. Good to have you back. Annie Nichols, our ladies of phones. She's also an expert DJ who is often busy on another radio station this time, but we're delighted to have her with us. Rich Lisinski, thank you so much, our engineer. And he's in charge of the applause and the screams occasionally. Phone numbers, 800-859-0957 is the phone number. Toll free. Come on, get on board. And let's dive in and talk with Barbara from Monroe. How can we help you there, Barbara, on the Internet Advisor?
Hello. Happy Veterans Weekend to all you gentlemen.
Thank you.
I have a Toshiba laptop, Windows 7. I keep getting a message that my battery needs to be replaced. My daughter replaced the battery on hers. My machine is almost 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I go to get a battery, and what do I have to do? Do I have to take everything off of my computer?
No, this is you have a laptop? Pardon me, was it a laptop you said you had?
Yes, Toshiba.
A Toshiba laptop.
Mm-hmm. And I keep getting a message on my computer from Toshiba saying my battery needs to be replaced.
So about 4 years or so, if you're using it a lot, or if you've let it run out all the way down to zero.
I've never let it run out.
That may be part of the problem. She hasn't really discharged it all the way.
And maybe if you don't use it at all, do you keep it almost always plugged in?
When I'm on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's just take a little side road on that about battery use.
So 4 years, whether... Yeah, we could talk about batteries.
Just quickly about that, guys. Can you comment on that,
Cal? And then we'll answer.
Well, I mean, it's lithium ion, right, Shane? So lithium ion does not develop a memory.
Oh, okay.
But it is a good idea.
But that's what they say.
It is a good idea every now and then to exercise the battery by running it all the way down and then charging it back up.
All the way down to 3%, but not all the way out, right?
You know, I used to run down when I ran to the end.
I'd run it down as low as I possibly could, yeah. But, you know, she's at that point now where probably the battery is shot anyway. So what I would do is I would – do you have access to another computer?
I do.
Okay. Then turn off your laptop. Flip your computer over, pull the battery out, and look at the model number on the battery.
Okay. I purchased it from Best Buy.
Okay.
And then what you're going to do is you can go out on the internet and search for places that sell Toshiba batteries, and just put in Toshiba battery and that model number of that battery, and you'll get a multitude of places that you can order them from.
Yeah, just go to Google and type it right into Google.
Well,
right?
Amazon. Shane, now what would you do as a retailer?
As a retailer?
Yeah.
Well, obviously we don't carry every battery in the store. We carry some of the common ones, but That's not a thing. We always have to order our batteries from vendors. The best way for you to order that battery is, like they said, go online, but go to Amazon or eBay, okay?
Yep,
but the key word that you're going to want to do is you're going to want to always put genuine in the search when you go to search, because then you're going to wind up with some knockoff from China, and it's going to last you, you know, 6 months to a year, and you're going to be right back to where you started.
Okay.
So you want to get a genuine Toshiba. So flip the battery over. Look at the part number, so put Toshiba satellite battery, put the part number, and then put genuine, and you'll find the genuine battery, the Toshiba.
Good point. Right. And I've done that on Amazon, and they're usually just with a couple dollars of each other, and you know, I'm really thinking about getting an Amazon Prime account. As many times as I use it.
Yeah.
And now I have kids in college, and the lady I carpool with, her daughter's up in Alaska for the next 9 months working up there, earning some extra cash, coming back to Michigan and spending it. So her daughter said to send her a care package, and I said, go to Amazon and send her the toilet paper and stuff, and let Amazon send it to her, you know? And so she's a Prime member.
As a matter of fact, just to save some time, do you have that laptop in front of you right now?
Yes, I do.
What is the model number on the top of that laptop?
A665.
A665?
It says satellite A665. Is that what you're asking?
Yep.
That's exactly.
What it's
And that's what you were...
So, while these guys are looking it up...
I do have an Amazon account.
Well, you could go to Amazon, and Amazon's a great place to go, but there's also some others. So batteriesplus.com is a good place to go
Tiger,
for batteries.
Tiger Direct?
Tiger Direct would be good potentially for certain things. I would always check it against Amazon. Amazon uses, they would not sell directly batteries.
No,
so what they do,
they have third parties.
So what they do is they have third parties, and they are built right in, so you don't even know that it's not Amazon.
Oh, it'll tell you in the listing that this isn't directly from Amazon.
Yes, but I mean, you have to look for it,
right?
I mean, it doesn't really matter, and they stand behind it, so that's really good, and Amazon's built a great business for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, all of the business-to-business inner, what they call integration, is built right here in Detroit.
Oh, really?
Right. In fact, not too far from where we're sitting right now. Garrett Gaw runs that office. His wife, we used to work together. His wife now works with me, Marianne Schumer. But it, you know, people don't realize all of the technology that's built here. So all that integration with business to business using Amazon is built right here in Detroit.
Wow.
That integration portion of it.
That's
so I would never say not to use Amazon, but there are some other good places as well.
Okay. Right. And Tigers, what was the other one? Tigers? Something?
Tiger Direct.
If you just put it into Google.
Yeah, you can just Google for it. You'll get a whole bunch.
You know what? They're going to be, and as Shane said, genuine. So you want to make sure they're genuine Toshiba batteries. And I would spend a few bucks more to get a Toshiba one. But you can go to lots of different companies that would give you genuine Toshiba batteries. So Laptop Battery Depot is another one that would have that.
So there's a lot of places out there you can shop around.
In Google. And you might be, you know, end up with going to Amazon anyway, which would be great.
And now remember, you're going to also have different types of cell. There's 6-cell, 9-cell.
What's the difference?
The larger battery size.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
They last longer. Yeah, they'll last 12 cell. You know, for instance, to just give you an example, like a new battery for her 655, was it? Yeah, 665. That's the most. That's the most sold Toshiba laptop in the market right now. That's the one everyone has. So you're going to get a good price in that battery because the demand's really
got any
quite
prices?
There. Depending on what size she's looking at, somewhere between 35 and 50, 60 bucks.
And to replace the one you have, it's probably the 35. They probably put just the
6-cell
in there. Yeah.
And when I was looking for mine, I'm cheap. Mm-hmm. And I found a genuine Dell for $14 for the laptop that I was doing.
Yep.
And I could not believe it. And it's just that it was a 5-year-old laptop.
Yeah.
Like Shane said, very popular, and people were just, you know, competing to sell
those
batteries.
Check Overstock.com, right?
Oh,
would be another place where somebody has these sitting there in a warehouse because they were probably built a little while ago, and they may be selling them. So you never know. That's a little more of of a guess sometimes where you can
go. We've taken a little longer because there's a number of different things. It's a great question that you open up. By the way, folks, this is a good example of how when you ask questions, it helps not just with that specific question, but also can help with a whole bunch of other things. And if it raises another question for you, folks, just follow it up with 800-859-0957. Barb, have a good weekend.
Can I ask you, battery out? I won't lose everything on my computer?
No, you won't.
Taking the battery out is the same as when you turn the computer off. Right. And then you take the battery out, it doesn't hurt anything.
Yeah, turn the computer off before you take the battery out.
That's good. Yep, exactly.
That's just precaution. You might not have
that's
to,
a good
but
point.
It's a good precaution.
Yeah, run shutdown on the computer, because if you've been using this computer, it's quite possible you've just been shutting the lid for the last 4 years or, you know.
That's what I would do.
That's a good point.
That's what Gary would do. So actually run a shutdown and then pull the battery.
Right. Guys, I'm going to ask you, we didn't touch on this too much, but Eddie, you sent me an article during the week, and it's been a big story, actually, about eBay being hacked. Are you guys as confident shopping at eBay now since that hack was announced?
You know, I haven't shopped at eBay in a number of years.
I
went to my PayPal account and changed that password, because there was a point in time where eBay and PayPal used the same IDs and passwords.
Oh.
So that's what I went to, was PayPal. I could not log in with my eBay account, because I guess it's been too long since I've used it, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like myself, I always have a separate account, bank account for online transactions that everything's tied into. And whenever there is a transaction, I get a notification on my phone. So I'm pretty quick with knowing if there's fraud out there with my accounts.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the eBay thing, I mean, there was some data leaked. It was encrypted credit card or encrypted mm-hmm. information. Mm-hmm. So the chances of them actually breaking the encryption are pretty rare.
Very.
You know, so,
yeah.
I mean.
I was just wondering, because
I don't even think the government could
in the conversation,
Microsoft encryption.
Yeah, I bet the government could, but not many others.
They have to work at it, yeah.
The reason I asked the question, though, is in all of, when we were talking with Barbara and other folks who are listening out there about where you go to shop for stuff, eBay isn't coming up as much as it used to come up, because that was one of the first places you would go.
Correct.
Well, for getting those great bargains. Mm-hmm. But actually now, it's like you can get them better elsewhere.
Well, they used to have this great B2B play as well, business-to-business play, where a lot of businesses were selling through eBay. Well, now a lot of them have either used both there and Amazon, or they've stopped using eBay for a variety of reasons, and some of it was change in ownership and policy and whatnot, and they're just using Amazon. And there's some others, too, but that's the other big player now in the market, and they're taking a lot of business away from eBay.
They are.
An awful lot. Okay, folks, we have one more segment now, and that means the last shot for you to get your calls in here at 800-859-0957. Please take an opportunity to do that. When we come back, we've got some more. We're going to talk about some travel applications that you can download to your phone. One of them is a charm, but a very necessary one for traveling. If there is anything on our program that you missed by some reason, don't forget that starting up on Sunday night, I will be posting the entire podcast of this program. And then we'll also break it down to individual segments, so you can download certain conversations and you can hear, for instance, the questions and answers we have, or some of these websites we're going to suggest. There's a gem we're going to get to.
So what you're saying to me is that if I really, really am a Gary Baker fan and I just love hearing his voice, I can move my podcast right up to that particular
segment.
There
you go.
Cool.
You
got it correct. That won't get us any downloads.
Just go back to internetadvisor.net. Show notes, by the way, are complete there. By the way, if you want to find out more about that, iChallenge.org. Wonderful organization. It's a series of videos, and I put a link up there for them. I did a whole bunch of video interviews with John Whitaker and a lot of the people that you heard on the air today. And it's just wonderful stories of how they have been helping people who are in need, who are visually challenged, to get the training they need, to get the equipment, and sometimes to get the operations they need. So if you know somebody who is visually challenged, who has a need of that, iChallenge.org. Go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and find out more about that. Let's go to Judy from Franklin. Hi, Judy. The historic village of Franklin. How can we help you?
Hi. I was wondering on a question about, you know, if I were to buy a Mac computer, and you were talking about the programs, they have different names than I'm accustomed to for, like, creating a document.
Yeah.
And you said Numbers was, like, the equivalent to Excel. What happens if I buy a Mac and I figure out how to use those programs? Can I send that document to somebody who doesn't have a Mac?
Very good. Are they backward compatible, Akel?
Yeah, you can export from that file. When you get ready to save it, you can say File, Save As, and then you pick the type of format you want to save it as. Do I want to save it as a Windows file, a Mac file, whatever way you want to do it.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yes. Really?
So then the Mac has the ability to save it as an Excel file, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
It's nice to find that interoperability because you don't find it very often with these walled gardens that are being built.
You never used to. And they're doing better and better at
yes.
really making sure that they're compatible.
Because it's global.
Okay. Global. And then, of course, obviously, if you have a flash drive and it's got Excel programs on it, it can open them, right?
You mean Excel documents.
I'm sorry. What did I say? Yeah.
You said the program, and I just didn't want to get people confused. Yes, you could.
Excuse me.
No, that's quite right. But that, you're right. Excel documents, and it is good that we have that interoperability.
Right.
I wonder if we aren't going to be breaking down more of those walls.
Now, let me say that within reason, okay? So, for example, if you've got a Mac and it's running numbers on it now, and you've got a file from Excel 3, which is like 10,000 versions back, it may or may not open it. But most of the recent stuff
the
is shell.
Stuff will, yep.
Right. Okay.
That's a very good point. Make sure that your Windows program is as up-to-date as you can get in order to make that switch.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I don't know what version I have, so yeah, I'll have to... I bought it, I think, with... You remember when was it?
If you bought it in this century, you got a pretty good chance that it's compatible.
Yeah, I don't think it's the Excel 3.
and the other thing that you can do, too, is that save the document on a flash drive, take a walk over to a store that sells Macs, and stick it in the machine and see if you can open it.
Oh, before you buy, yeah, of course.
Yeah, try before you buy.
They might not let you to Best Buy, but if you go to someplace like Shane's...
A small place.
Yes. Store, yes.
Do they let you do it at the Apple Store?
Comptech.
Yeah, they'll let you do it at the Apple Store.
Yeah, Apple Store will let you.
Will you?
Yeah, okay. Maybe, yeah. They're a little, like you said, they're a little tricky in what you stick in them.
Okay. Yeah, but most of the responsible places are making sure they have the proper virus protection on their machines, so therefore sticking should be safe.
Yeah, with protection.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to be careful for yourself as well, okay?
Right. You know, the lady that called just before me, the one that had the battery question, I was just wondering, my computer is from 2009, and... I use it plugged into the house all the time, and I wondered, is that I never take it anywhere. It never really runs off of its own battery. Am I doing anything bad?
Well, it's not so much bad is that you are probably reducing the endurance of the battery. Am I right, guys? If you were to take it out, it wouldn't hold a charge as long. Am I right on that, guys, or am I wrong?
You need to exercise the battery every now and then. So, you know, the next time you get ready to use the computer, the days are nicer now, go out on the back deck. Without the AC adapter, turn it on, have a pina colada, type up a couple of stories, and then go back in the house and plug it back in, and that'll be good for
you. Or you could just unplug it and plug it back in before you get up from.
Let the battery
that's
work.
What I would, okay, like overnight, just let it.
Yeah.
Right.
And like, once a month.
I try not to let it go to run down completely. Mm. Now, you guys don't think that's a problem.
Well, because what happens is the power saver settings. If you unplug it and leave it, it's probably going to go into hibernate or sleep within 15 minutes anyways. So the next time you're going to be watching all your Facebooks and then a couple of YouTubes, just unplug it from the wall for an hour. Yeah. You know,
right. Yeah.
And it runs. I do it, for instance, once a week, usually after the show. I'll get home, just unplug it, and exercise the battery. That it'll just give it. It means if you ever have to get up and go out and use it, you'll have longer battery life then. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, then in that regard, the answer is I don't have to do it because I never take that thing anywhere.
You're probably right. Then you're right.
And you're fine. Continue on as is.
Okay. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
You know what my wife does? She, you know, during the day, she's trying to save electricity. She'll walk around to every laptop that's in the house and unplug it because she calls the bricks vampires. And she swears that she's saving us money by doing that. And she goes, I saved $40 this month by unplugging those
vampires. And who are you to question, Mr. Rudell?
That's excellent, honey.
I bet you she can make an eagle squeal on a quarter, too, can't she?
Buffalo moo. Joanne from Concordia, Ohio. How you doing? How can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Yes, hi, gentlemen. My question is semi-related. Seems like this is Mac question.
It is. Yeah, it's migrating to Macs this week.
Kale was kind enough to speak with me off the air for a few minutes last week. I had called. I'm considering switching over to the Mac platform, and one of my major considerations was maintaining the ability to use my machine embroidery software. And I think I've got pretty well solved. I did talk to a colleague last week who uses the program extensively. She teaches that program, and she said she uses Parallels.
Okay.
So I did a little bit of research on that, and I'm very unfamiliar with that, but apparently it's a software program that allows
you virtual, to... Yeah, it's a virtual machine, right?
That is correct.
It's, in other words, if it's a piece of software you install on your computer that runs another operating system. So if it's on a Mac, it could run Windows. If it was on Windows?
Right. That was my understanding, and that's kind of what it looked like to me. But I wondered if anybody there has some, you know, personal usage with that. Mm-hmm. And then I have a really stupid question. If I switched, well, for one thing, I have to tell you that I asked a lot of people, you know, if they had you know, been using Macs or anything, and most of the people were still Windows users, and they all looked at me kind of cross-eyed and wondered why I wanted to switch. And my primary reasons, I have several, but one is I like the footprint.
Okay.
I like the you know, the configuration of an iMac, and I really want to move into doing more with photos and videos. I need a new computer, and it just kind of seems to make sense.
Now, when you say you like the configuration of the iMac, you mean
the all-in-one?
Just what we would suggest, and we're out of time again, but what we would suggest is go to a store where you can get your hands on both, because there are some great all-in-ones Windows machines as well.
I haven't seen any that floated my boat, though.
Okay.
And next time, Joanne, call in earlier in the show.
Yes!
Okay.
Maybe get a hold of you.
Or you call in right near the end, and Cal will talk to you offline.
Yeah, maybe that's the plan, right?
Hey,
no,
Joanne.
That wasn't my plan.
No, that's right. Have a good week. We are going to get put you on hold, and we will talk to you afterwards about this. But by the way, the suggestion for her and for everybody else is find a good store, a Best Buy, a Micro Center if you're in the Detroit area, or one of the Apple stores or the Windows store out in Troy, and just get your hands on the machines and just try them on a little bit and find out how they feel for you. That's the way to go. Hey, thank you, folks, for being here with us and having a great weekend. Hope it's a safe one for you. We will see you here again next Saturday, 4 to 6, on the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.